Good morning, and welcome to the Project Joy Radio Show. Good morning, Ashwini.
Hey, Chris.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
Indeed, it is afternoon here. All right, shall we launch?
Yes, please.
Today's assignment, or actually yesterday's assignment. The same eyes with which I see God, God sees me. Once again, we get to explore the power of realizing the process of projection. When God is viewed through ego's eyes, God has all the attributes and behaviors of egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate. Viewed through that lens, God is judgmental, punishing, angry, and jealous. When viewed through the eyes of authenticity, God is compassionate, kind, generous, understanding, and loving. Our life experience is determined by the focus of our attention. If attention is on ego, the world / God is hostile and dangerous. When attention is on presence, the world / God is a tender, benevolent friend. Today, keep a close eye on projections, allowing the projections to assist you to see what is doing the projecting. Record and listen.
Wow.
Yeah, really. So let's check in with our first caller. First caller, you're now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, good morning. This is Greta.
Hey, Greta.
Hi. Well, I put myself in the queue as part of our practice, and I'm being told I have nothing prepared to say this morning.
Yes. Yeah.
But I will say that, you know, this how you say it is how it is kind of practice we've been looking at for a while, and I think the exercise is pointing to who's saying it and what are we attending to. And that's certainly been, it's so clear that when our attention is with conditioned mind, the world is very small and hateful, and, you know, we become that little sniveling ball. And if I just look up from that place, it's a completely different experience in every moment.
Exactly so. So I think we've been having a couple of exercises that are all pointing to that limited perspective or limited experience of life we have when we're looking through the lens of limitation. And that when we look up from that lens, there is a world of possibility that's completely different.
Right. And yesterday, my experience was reading the monastery newsletter and the letter from the guide, which was very strongly worded. You know, the answer without thinking was an immediate, yes, I'll step up to that invitation. And the reaction then was a complete argument for the limitation. But it was too late because I already sent my message. You know, sign me up and then my stomach will clench with fear and all these things will happen that will argue for the limitation, which is exactly what is keeping me in that little sniveling ball with everything else.
Yes. Well, and what you say is so powerful, right, Greta, because there is that experience we all have of life leaping to participate, to awaken, and then the conditioning comes in to stop us. And that was the invitation in that rather strongly worded newsletter article, right? Because if you truly say that what you're trying to be is what is the Buddha, or what you want is to be the Buddha, then trying to be the Buddha is falling short of that. And the only thing that we have to go up against to awaken to that experience of a direct, that direct experience of the intelligence that animates, or what the assignment is pointing at, is to go up against and transcend what limits us. However we choose to do that, whatever structure we choose to assist us in that process, the yes, and then watching how the no arrives and not listening to it, it becomes the practice.
Right, right. And I think the place that the article was pointing to for me was being able to clearly discern. And it's so easy to get caught in the trap. Well, was that life speaking? Was that ego speaking? I'm not sure. I don't know what to do. And I have been finding myself in that place, and I clearly don't want to live there. You know, it's just, I know it's really clear. I'm just not, you know, getting my attention here now, and I'm not practicing enough to get that life message. I'm not here right now for the life message all the time. And so I very readily, at least these days, I'm getting confused. And, you know, I just feel like I don't want to spend that time there, because it just leads down the rabbit hole, and there we are just circling our tail, you know. Well, I don't know. And it's like, no, that's not working for me.
Yeah. So I think what you were pointing at on so many levels is so interesting, that the part of the article that really resonated for you is that ability to discern when we're identified or when we're in ego land versus being here for life, which is very similar to the assignment, right? Which eyes am I seeing through, and how do I get clarity around that? Because there's a growing awareness for you that being in a place of ego isn't where you want to be, and also being in a conversation about whether or not you are in life or in ego is also a place that you don't want to be.
Yeah, exactly. So that's very much my experience. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and but that invitation that I think the article is affording to all of us is to engage in a structure which will assist us in the process of training the discernment, not arriving at a conclusion.
Yeah, could you say that again? I didn't quite catch it.
Well, the invitation is to engage in any practice structure that really challenges the ego, because we want to go past it, but also it's an invitation to a process of training the discernment, not arriving at a conclusion, right? So the confusion, noticing the confusion, is an interesting aspect of knowing when we are in conditioning and when we're in life. Because confusion, as we've often defined it, is looking to condition mind to get clarity. So you know that experience. You know that that's not the experience of being in life, which is a very valuable thing to know.
Right. So what I had missed in what you repeated, thank you for doing that, is the word training. And that seems so much it. We're not going to get anywhere, but we're just going to continue to practice to build that awareness, build that muscle, build that relationship with knowing the experience of being in life, so that it's not a question anymore. You know, it's like, okay, this is the place. This is it. I'm coming back. And I know where I'm coming back to. I'm not coming back to the confusion or the question. I'm coming back to this place that we're clearly able to articulate and discern from ego.
Yes, and I love that. I love the way you rephrase that, Greta, with this added thing about perhaps all we're ever coming back to is, well, I am confused, so I know that experience is just conditioning, but being here is such a variety of experience that we actually never know. But the ability to be curious, to not know, is the place of being here. And there's a growing awareness of what that feels like.
Well, that was so zen, I don't think I could say anything else. We're always coming back to the place we can't say we're coming back to, but we know it when we get there.
Well, we know we're here. Right.
Because right. Yep.
As you can tell, in your body, in your laughter, there is an intuitive sensing of what that was. And even if there wasn't, there is the laughing question of, well, I don't quite get it, which is your experience of the moment, isn't it? I don't quite get it, which is true, which is what your presence chooses.
Right, right. And that is a very different experience to contrast to confusion. So
that's right.
Right now I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah, or believing that I don't know. Well,
right.
Actually, you don't know if is your experience of the moment, then that is your experience of the moment, and it's completely acceptable.
Right, right.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Well,
it's a classic place in facilitation where you're sitting across from someone and you're facilitating them, and something that drops in disappears, and you say, well, I don't quite know what to say this moment. It's such a present moment experience because we are right there with what our experience is.
Right, not pushing it away for right or wrong or this or that or how you should be different or than it is or any of those places. Yes, just being open to whatever is right here.
Yeah. I don't know. Isn't that interesting? I'm listening to a conversation about the fact that I'm confused about what you just said. That's very present, right? Because
right.
That's what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, and in another way, it points us right back to the assignment. If we just go to how you say it is how it is, say, well, I don't know, you know, but you're doing that in the present moment place, that's a real different than, well, I don't know, from a confused place, and you're saying the same thing, but it's pointing back to where the projection is coming from or where we're looking from.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. When we get here, we actually do have something to say. Just have to be here.
I was just about to point that out. Because that's
exactly what I love about putting ourselves in the queue. And really coming from that place of, I don't know, conditioning having one version of it, life having another version of it, and then we open our mouth and all kinds of things we do know, but we don't know them until now.
Yes, which is also the mystery of knowing.
Right.
Of being
right.
Present.
Thank
exactly.
you very much.
Oh, thank you, Greta.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you,
bye-bye.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye.
Boy, Shwini, that seemed like such a critical point to get, and certainly my experience that the closer I get to center, the less tempted I am. That's not even the right way to describe it, but the less interest there is in any conversation about whether I'm identified or disidentified. It's almost like experience just overwhelms me in some sense or takes up so much of the attention that there's no concern for whether I'm identified or not identified.
Yes, I think you're pointing at what we always say, right? There is no separation.
Yeah.
You have that the conversation is what gives us a narrative experience of life rather than a direct experience of life.
Yeah. And a conversation about being identified or not being identified at in the beginning really feels like it's a critical one to have, that it's actually assisting with that determining, sensing of, where I'm, the attention currently is. And then as we go further, it just seems like, no, I got it. That, again, any conversation is, no matter what the content is, is not helpful. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, great. Let's see what our next caller has to say. Next caller, you're now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Good morning. It's Jane from Colorado.
Hi, Jane.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I know it's redundant, but I just have to say out loud, the difference between listening and being in the queue is huge. So thank you.
It is indeed.
Yeah, it's amazing. And that's what I've been seeing is the difference between like being really engaged with life and then sort of being engaged. It's really a marked difference, and being in the queue helps me get the really engaged part. I am seeing also that most of my thoughts are projections. Maybe all of them. It feels like that. But definitely the majority of my thoughts are projections. I didn't even know how identified I was with the kind of car people drive until I read Sherry's newsletter post. So I was like, oh, yeah, I do that. So, yeah, it's such a gift, such a gift. And I wanted to share something that happened yesterday, even though it's such a mystery, but I think, Ashwini, you might have some insight into it. I got it that someone that I care about that's very close to me is, I mean, almost everything he thinks and says is conditioning, and I've been burdened by that, and I got it. It dropped in that that's not who he is. I hear you and Sherry saying that a lot, but I could see him separate from conditioning, and it's just a huge miracle. So I just wanted to say that out loud. I don't understand why it happened, how it happened, but I know it's true when Sherry, I can hear her saying the biggest gift we can give another person is to approach them knowing that there's nothing wrong with them. And when someone's so riddled by conditioning, it's hard to believe that if you see that as part of them.
Yes. Well, you know, Jane, there's so much in that because it all ties together. Every insight you've shared with us this morning, it all ties together, and it's all related to that assignment because it ultimately comes down to that quote from yesterday, the same eyes with which God sees me, right? That when we are able to be in that completely disidentified place, we can see God everywhere. And it takes a tremendous amount of practice, and we don't know, right? That's what you're pointing at. The grace with which we receive the lens dropping or the veil dropping that brings us to this place of, well, I can see clearly what is conditioned and what is authentic. And I appreciate the authenticity and know the difference is the place of discernment. And I project it goes back to what you were talking about projection, right? That what happened is the customary way with which you project on the world, which is a conditioned projection, allows us not to be able to see the difference between conditioned projections and authentic ones, right? When life is seeing versus when conditioning is seeing, we either see conditioning or we see life. And what happened in your experience was you saw life, you saw authenticity, and could clearly see that that wasn't conditioning. And the transformation happens in us, right? We take off the ego lenses and put on the awareness lenses, and the world looks very different. Someone who we've only related to as a conditioned human because we're coming from a conditioned place of whatever it is, stops being that way. And so it doesn't, we actually don't know whether the other person is conditioned or not, but we know we're coming from a different place. And that's all that is relevant.
Yes, I just opened up that the quote isn't just about projection. It's also about that when we're not in conditioning, we do literally have the eyes of God.
That's right.
We are looking through the eyes of God, and so that would be a lot easier to see them as love and not riddled by conditioning, because I knew I was in conditioning when I was judging him as being so conditioned. But,
exactly so, right? Yes,
yeah.
Because that's what we're always projecting. The question is, where are we projecting from? And if we're in that context of expanded awareness, then we can see conditioning for what conditioning is, and we can see authenticity for what authenticity is, and we're not confused. It doesn't mean that we can't have compassion for someone who is so tortured by self-hate or who's coming from conditioning and is behaving in a certain way, right? That's where we get to, that authenticity has the ability to be compassionate to the suffering that egocentric karma conditioning self-hate causes. But do we see that from a place of compassion, or do we see that from a place of judgment? That's what we are trying to discern, right? Because the change only happens in us.
Yes, and that helps me so much, because I do want to do something to help, and me getting rid of my conditioning lens and approaching them like there's nothing wrong with them is a huge thing to do. without necessarily, trying to fix their problems or whatever I would have done in the past, that affirm there's something wrong with them because they need to be fixed.
Yes, that is such an important point, that the greatest gift that we can offer is that our orientation of there's nothing wrong, and therefore approaching a situation like God would, right? There's nothing wrong with anything. But if there's something that moves through me that can assist someone else, then we're right here for that. Without any attachments to, it will go the way we think it must go.
Yes, yes. And it's such a miracle to have that knowing of, this isn't you. And I don't need to say that, but, for me to approach them when they're so down, and or have, something bad going on, it's like, but that's not who you are, but that's my attitude, not my words. But, it's just, boy, I am a different friend when I'm there.
Yes, we are. Because there is no ego in it, right?
Yes.
There's only unconditional love. And love is an exquisitely different way of approaching anything than judgment is.
Yes. we would say the opposite, right? Yeah.
Yes,
thank
exactly
you.
So. Yeah, well, and it goes back to what you were talking about, being in the queue, right? Because when we're in the queue, there's a heightened awareness and a presence that we feel a discernment, a difference than when we're participating with presence and not in the queue. Well, there is a little bit of margin for the conditioned, for conditioning, perhaps. And so it's the same difference that we're practicing everywhere, right? What does wholehearted presence look like? What does attentional awareness feel like? What is it like to be in that place of looking at the world through the eyes of God?
That's been such a gift in the last couple of days, because go happy. I'm doing a good job of going happy. I'm happy. Life is good. But go in heightened awareness. Go out with the eyes of God. That's not that there's levels, but it just feels like it's more of life.
It does, because happiness is such a conditioned orientation, right? It's an unexamined one. And what you're pointing at is to bring awareness to what it's like to expand that happy to being present and aware to all the flavors of existence, just like flavors of attention or flavors of participation or flavors of love.
Yes. Thank you. My heart
is overflowing.
Deep bow.
Thank you, Jane.
Boat. Oh, my gosh. Thank you.
Please get
go heightened awareness.
Yes, go heightened awareness.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jane. It does seem like that's a really important point, too, Ashwini, that when we're identified, the world is a screen, and all we see are all of those hints that were identified out there. And then as soon as we can see through that, then we're really looking right. I mean, the only thing that would be behind that would be authenticity
and love.
Our whole experience and love, yeah, and then that just completely changes our experience. All right, let's get our next caller here. Next caller, you're now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi. This is Alicia from Seattle. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hi, Alicia.
Oh, great. I'm on the computer, and I haven't called in this way. You know, just listening to the conversation, you know, it just now, I was really reminded. I think every time I call, I mention, you know, going on retreat, that I, you know, that there's nothing wrong retreat earlier this year, and you know, that just that retreat was, I feel, really the first time I could experience really what you and the last caller were just talking about, this you know, this experience of being with, you know, because of the privileged environment, you, how can I put it? You know, the projections, I had the, or at least it seems I had the experience of not, of basically being able to see with the eyes of God, I think because of the way, you know, the retreat is structured, and what a gift, just what a gift that experience was, because now, you know, like, you know, other people are saying, especially through these exercises, you're just seeing, I mean, I saw self-hate clearly, you know, before the retreat, but this, the projections are so painful and narrowing. I mean, I just have, sorry about that, had that experience of how beautiful, or I don't even have the words, you know, for, you know, the experience I had on retreat, and then coming back and having the contrast it was just such a great experience to even have the glimpse of it. And now, you know, with Project Joy, you know, being able to bring that into focus in a kind way, you know, rather than a self-hating way, like, gosh, why are, how can you have these projections, or, you know, I don't know if it's coherent, but just, I've been in a kind of stunned state of, you know, how beautiful it is to, seeing through the eyes of God.
Yeah. So to have an experience of the privileged environment where it's possible, first off, to see egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, as a process that has nothing to do with me and is projecting all over the world, is astounding, right? To get that's not me. To have an experience of authenticity that's not ego is one of the greatest gifts that we could all have. And to have a container to experience that is marvelous. And then I love what you were saying, Alicia, that once you have that experience, it's possible to incorporate it independent of circumstances.
Right.
Right? The conditions are created for us to have that experience, and if by some grace we do, then when we, what we then start to practice with is how to have that experience unconditionally. In other words, not dependent on circumstances. And to be able to know that that system is operating all the time and that any identification with it is, it results in us, in us having the experience of self-hate, right? So
right.
I know I'm projecting from ego in this moment, or I have been taken over, but to be able to step back and say, well, that's not me, that's conditioning, mm-hmm. brings that beauty and compassion to our experience as human beings, because we're constantly oscillating between seeing with the eyes of God and seeing through the eyes of ego. It's just
right.
simply what we do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, yeah. Yeah. It's.
What I was going to say is, I think part of the stupendous nature of having that experience and knowing that oscillation is, before that experience, we only know ourselves as self-hate. But after that experience, knowing that oscillation, we have that ability to recognize ourselves as what we truly are, which is the intelligence that animates, and we never had that experience before.
Right.
Right? That's what's so transformative, that there is an awareness that there's power, beauty, compassion, and intelligence that also exists, which a self-hating view of myself completely stops us from having or
mm-hmm.
owning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. I am just so grateful, you know, for the glimpse of that knowledge, you know, that how, yeah, it's just been, yeah, like you say, it's transformative. You never can go back to not knowing that.
Yes.
So.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You can never go back to completely believing that self-hate, that self that is hating or hated, is what you are.
Right.
We always have that knowledge of knowing that we are more. And I project that we come to a spiritual practice because there is an awareness of that, that's the absence that we are seeking to correct.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a direct experience of presence, which then makes the absence less believable.
Right. Exactly. Yes. It's so great. Thank you. I just love, it's just so fun to chat with you all and be a part of this. Like everybody, I'm just so grateful that I have this support. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And help us all see with the eyes of God more often, doesn't it, Alicia?
Indeed.
Yeah. We project joy.
Yes. Exactly.
And it comes down to that. Yeah. And we're supported when we aren't able to do that.
Right.
Yeah. Doesn't get any better.
No. Freedom.
Freedom. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ashwin.
Thanks, Alicia. But projection is a powerful tool.
It is. We have a whole year connected to projecting joy, Chris.
Yep, that's exactly right. Yep, yep. And I think we've reached the end of another fabulous show, Ashwini. So the assignment for today. Two Zen
yes.
masters were walking beside a stream. How happily the fish are swimming in the stream, observed one. You do not know the fish are swimming happily, observed the other, thoroughly schooled in the notion of projection. You do not know that I do not know that the fish are swimming happily, countered the first, apparently even more thoroughly schooled in the notion of projection. Oh, how certain we can feel when caught in ego's knowing. Every conditioned human being knows it's not possible to know whether or not fish are happy. Really? How do we know that? We've been told that, or rather, we've extrapolated from similar things we've been told we can't know. But is assuming and believing the same as knowing? Being largely unexamined, the answer is yes. Assuming, believing, and knowing are all the same thing. The problem with believing and assuming that what we think we know is true is that the methods we're conditioned to use to determine what's true are the same methods that got us bamboozled in the first place. Today, find a quiet bit of time and space to consider this. In a non-separate reality, wouldn't it make sense that one form of expression of life could experience the experience of another form of that same life?
Wow. Exciting.
An exciting exploration, indeed.
Yes, it is. Yes. I can't wait to experience fishes being happy.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Jenny.
Talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.